Radio Praga, noticias.
Checos entregan casi 8.000 armas ilegales. Se prolonga la exposición La maldición del oro inca de Praga. El Sparta de Praga no logra clasificar para la Liga de Campeones. Ciudadanos checos han entregado casi 8.000 armas de fuego en el marco del proyecto de una amnistía declarada por la policía entre el 1 de febrero y el 31 de julio. Esta cifra representa el doble de las armas reunidas en las amnistías anteriores, efectuadas en 1996 y 2003, según se desprende del informe publicado este miércoles por la policía del país. La venta de automóviles disminuyó un 13% en los primeros 7 meses de este año en la República Checa en comparación con el 2008, según informó la Asociación de la Importación de Automóviles. Esa cifra se debe principalmente a la notable reducción de compras de vehículos por empresas del país. También se ha registrado una disminución de un 50% de la venta de autobuses y camiones debido a la recesión económica. 3 turistas checos fallecieron este martes en un accidente de tráfico en Bulgaria. El chofer del vehículo murió en el acto, los 2 tripulantes murieron tras ser hospitalizados. La tragedia se produjo en la carretera que une las ciudades de Burgas y Sosopol. Según la policía, el automóvil checo no dobló a la derecha al salir de una gasolinera, sino que intentó realizar un giro de 180 grados y encarrilarse en el sentido contrario. En la maniobra chocó contra un automóvil búlgaro. La cadena de música estadounidense MTV iniciará el 29 de noviembre las transmisiones para la República Checa y Eslovaquia. La televisión transmitirá un programa de 24 horas por medio del cable, el satélite y un portal de Internet. Aparte de la música y de intérpretes locales y extranjeros, el canal ofrecerá programas de reality show y teleseries, según informó la portavoz de la televisión privada checa Nova. La exposición La maldición del oro, 1000 años del oro de los incas, que se efectúa estos días en Praga, será prolongada hasta el 31 de octubre. En la misma se expone una colección privada de la familia Mujica Gallo, residente en la capital peruana Lima, que incluye numerosos objetos provenientes de la época de la civilización inca. Durante el mes de septiembre, el evento será acompañado con una serie de conferencias regulares dedicadas a la vida antigua y actual del Perú. El Sparta de Praga no jugará la Liga de Campeones. El club capitalino perdió este martes en Atenas con el Panathinaikos por 0-3 en el partido de vuelta de la tercera ronda preliminar, con lo que el marcador global quedó en 4-3 para los griegos. Más información sobre el partido les ofreceremos tras el boletín de noticias. Por su parte, el Slavia de Praga se enfrentará este miércoles en su campo en el choque de vuelta al Sheriff Tiraspol de Moldavia. El partido de ida terminó con un empate a 0. Este miércoles tenemos en la República Checa cielos nublados y semidespejados con chubascos aislados y temperaturas máximas que oscilan entre los 22 y los 26 grados centígrados. Y aquí ponemos el punto final al boletín de noticias, hoy a cargo de Román Casado. El noticiario completo de Radio Praga lo pueden encontrar en la página web www.radio.cz.
Hello, you're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Rosie Johnston. Coming up in the programme today, energy giant ČEZ says it wants to expand its nuclear power plant at Temelín, more than doubling its capacity. In light of the plans for new reactors, politicians in neighbouring anti-nuclear Austria speak out.
We still remember what happened in Chernobyl, and for the future we have to concentrate our energy supply on renewable energy.
And we follow the latest developments in a defamation case that's lasted, believe it or not, 18 years and counting. All of that's coming up, so be sure to stay tuned. Czech power giant ČEZ has launched a tender to expand the controversial Temelín nuclear power plant in South Bohemia. The move, aimed at more than doubling output, has raised questions at home over why the company is pushing the proposal ahead right now. Chris Johnstone joins me in the studio to explain some of the background. So first of all, Chris, what is power company ČEZ's stated aim?
CES at the moment has launched a tender. It's set a deadline of the end of October for bids to be made to build these two reactors at Temelin. It's a bit vague on the details at the moment because it said it doesn't want to rule some companies in or rule some companies out. But in the past it said it wants to construct an extra 3,400 megawatts of capacity, which is a lot more than double what it has there at the moment. Basically, CES wants to get the ball rolling. It takes 7 or 8 years for the paperwork to be put in order for these sort of things to get going, and maybe another 15 years to build a power plant. It says it's studied all the other options, renewables, coal-fired plants, and nuclear power has basically come up trumps.
And so why, in that case, is this causing controversy?
Well, the fact is, at the moment, that there is no political decision giving the go-ahead for more nuclear power in the Czech Republic. If you remember, the previous coalition government of Mirek Topolánek, because of Green Party pressure in that government, there was actually an effective ban on new nuclear power. Also, at the moment, that government called for a new energy programme, a new energy policy, which still hasn't been completed, so the country's a bit in the dark over what it should be doing for the next 30 years on energy. And also, CES, although in the past it called for an environmental impact assessment of new nuclear reactors at Temelin, it still hasn't been given permission for that assessment. So in that sense, it's a bit strange.
So why all this rush then?
CES basically is a company that's sort of pumping out money at the moment. It's a cash cow. It's making a lot of money, about 50 billion crowns of profits every year, and it needs to invest it. Also, there is the fact that, as we said, there are long deadlines for these nuclear projects, you know, decades basically. And another big factor is that worldwide there are only 5 or so companies that build nuclear plants, companies like Mitsubishi, Siemens, Areva in France. And there is a big worry at the moment with the global rush into nuclear power that if it doesn't reserve some orders now, then it could basically miss the boat. Also, there are environmental pressures. The European Union is pushing for the so-called carbon allowances that the companies will have to buy effectively pollution permits in the future from 2013, and that makes nuclear more attractive compared with fossil fuels. So CES wants to go ahead pretty quick.
All right, Chris Johnstone, thank you very much. And CES's decision to more than double Temelin's capacity has raised hackles in neighbouring anti-nuclear Austria. Politicians in Upper Austria, which lies under 30 kilometres away from the plant, have threatened legal action and even border blockades if the expansion goes ahead. The Austrian Green Party ranks amongst the plan's most vociferous critics. A little earlier, I asked the Austrian Greens spokesperson, Christiane Brunner, what her party's problem with the new reactors was.
It's a problem that we have with the expansion in Temelin, but also with atomic power in general. Austrian policy, and especially the Green policy, is against nuclear power because we think it's not a safe technology. We still remember what happened in Chernobyl, and I think that for the future we have to focus our energy, or to concentrate our energy supply, on renewable energy and not on atomic power.
Okay, but surely at a time when countries like Britain are planning to actually build brand new nuclear power plants, and all of the European Union is talking about decreasing its dependence upon Russian oil, surely going for something like nuclear power is quite a good, smart idea.
From our point of view, no. Of course, we have to make our energy supply more independent from fossil fuels, from Russia. But I think also from this point of view, atomic power is not the right solution. Also, resources from atomic power we don't have enough within the European Union. We will still be dependent from imports, so we have to change the energy systems to renewable resources. We also have to consider all the health aspects and environmental aspects, and for us this is not the way to go.
What would the Austrian Green Party, but indeed Austria, rather the Czechs, do instead of expanding Temelín nuclear power plant?
In the long term, all countries should change their energy systems to renewable resources, and this we have to do step by step. In the meantime, maybe we will still need some gas and oil resources, but on the long term, we have to change our systems to renewables, and this we have to start now and do the first steps.
Are you planning any action to stop the Czechs from expanding Temelín's capacity, for example, legal action, or rather more extremely, border barricades?
So far, we haven't planned any extreme actions. What we will do now is to ask for information, to ask for the highest standards in the permission procedures, and then we will think about other actions as well. But so far, we didn't plan anything.
That was Christiana Brunner, a spokesperson for the Austrian Green Party, who was speaking there from Vienna. And now it's over to you. What do you think about CEZ's plans to expand its nuclear power plant at Temelín? Is that the most viable solution to the energy problems we face right now in Europe, or a worrying development, as Ms. Brunner suggests? Write to us with your views by email at english@radio.cz or by post at Wienerhadzka 12 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. That debate looks set to rumble on for quite a time yet. But now to something else that's been rumbling on for a decade or two. The wheels of Czech justice are famously slow to turn, with court cases dragging on for what seems like, and often is, years. But how about this one? In the early days of the Velvet Revolution, in November 1989, three students of architecture described their communist professor as an arrogant careerist and demagogue. He later demanded an apology and took them to court. 20 years on, and the case is still unresolved. Rob Cameron has more.
It's a journalist cliché to say that 20 years since the fall of communism, Czechs are still coming to terms with the legacy of the old regime. But in the case of three former students of architecture, Jiří Slezák, Martin Laštovička and Zdeněk Hirnšal, and their former professor at the Brno University of Technology, Jan Snášel, this is literally true. The case dates back to the heady days of November 1989, when students all over the country began to hold impromptu strikes in protests at the communist regime. The three, as members of the Student Strike Committee, put up a notice accusing their teacher of demagogic, arrogant and careerist behaviour. This was not wholly off the mark. Mr. Snášel was the head of the local Communist Party cell and was actively opposing the pro-democracy protests. The regime fell and he was later forced to leave the school. However, Mr. Snášel took full advantage of his newly enshrined democratic rights, and in 1991 he took the students to court for defamation of character and demanded an apology. They refused. 18 years later, and the case is still languishing in the Czech courts. On Tuesday, the Constitutional Court in Brno heard its third complaint in the case and, for the third time, ruled in the students' favour. This time, Mr. Snášel had complained to the Constitutional Court because the lower court hearing the case had refused to let his son testify. Jan Snášel and his son are now in business together, and the son had claimed the case was damaging their commercial reputation. The Constitutional Court rejected the complaint, pointing out that the son was 10 in 1989 and so hardly relevant. The lower court will now resume hearing the case. No case has dragged on for so long in the Czech courts, famous for their snail's pace. The European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg has already compensated the three students for the excessive delay in resolving the matter.
Rob Cameron there with one of the longest-running disputes in modern Czech legal history. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Radio Prague, Czech Radio's international service. Now, in the last part of our show today, it's time to visit the Czech Curiosity Collectors Club with Jan Wellinger.
Collecting as a hobby is popular in the Czech Republic, as it is throughout the world. The country has no shortage of those who collect prints, coins, stamps, and works of art. But the country also boasts a high number of collectors focused on more unusual items, from pocket diaries to fruit and vegetable labels, from historic puppets to paper tissues. The country's Curiosity Collectors Club, based in Prague, was founded more than 40 years ago and now has around 1,000 members. Recently, I caught up with the group's chairman, Ladislav Lickler, to learn more about the art of collecting, specifically collecting the unusual.
Klub vznikl v roce 1965.
Collecting behind the Iron Curtain in former Czechoslovakia really began to get popular in the 1960s, and our club was founded in 1965. At the time, it was difficult to travel abroad, so many collected things instead, to learn more about the world. Popular items in those days included matches, postcards, pins, and labels. Those were quite non-traditional items in collecting at the time, hence the name and focus of the club. But they have become a bit more mainstream since.
According to Ladislav Lickler, Czech collectors boast some of the grandest collections in the world, for example, of chocolate bar or chewing gum wrappers. He himself has put together a famous collection of historic as well as contemporary cheese labels from all over. How many? An incredible 168,000, a collection which took decades to complete. That said, Lickler, who is an agrobiologist by profession, makes clear that collectors of curious items are well aware that what they find worth saving is rarely valued by the broader public.
These are items which don't have any value for anyone other than collectors. But for us, they are interesting and bring a lot of satisfaction.
He adds that collections such as his own do have significant historic resonance, capturing an era, printing techniques, painterly motifs, methods of presentation, and storage.
One of the things about our club is that it's more than just about collecting, but it's about knowledge and information. A number of our members have published articles or texts relating items in an historical context to specific professional fields. We have experts who also cooperate with businesses and are considered the very best.
One person whose collection is regularly visited by TV crews and print reporters is Rudolf Kocourek, a specialist in die-cast and plastic model cars. His collection features hundreds of miniatures from police cars and ambulances to Formula One, organized and carefully labeled behind glass year by year. Enough to make any collector envious.
Fiat and marks which belongs to Fiat, it means Lancia, Alfa Romeo, Ferrari, some Maserati nowadays. And this is sorted by year from 1898 up to now. Roughly in Italy, because I have also British cars and some French, but in Italy 2,800 Italian cars. Many Fiats I have, or several Fiats I was driving. It has something together. I like Italy, Italian food, sun, sea. So, could be the reason is here.
For him, it all began 45 years ago, when he was just 10 years old. Rudolf Kocourek got his first matchbox car for Christmas. All such cars were known as Angličáky, then, the collector explains.
Angličáky means little English car. All the, it was only matchbox in those days, so it was made in England in those days. Afterwards, it was moved from England to Thailand and to Macau, China, Bulgaria, but first were made in England.
As his collection grew, he had to decide what form it would take, not only in terms of focus, but also in terms of scale.
I focus on one scale. This 1/2-1/3, it's about, let's say, 10 centimeters long, which are not so difficult to store, and you can see many details there, and it's a very, very common scale in Europe, not in the United States, but in Europe, and many producers are producing in this scale. On this scale, you can see many details. Many things you can do yourself, like me, because I wanted to to show the history of Mark in models. It means if some model or some version is not produced, I do it myself.
Not surprisingly, putting together complete collections requires certain ingenuity and, last but not least, a fair amount of disposable income.
You cannot count if you collect something. You cannot count money. It's not not investment, it's an expense because you never get it back.
But when it comes to collecting, says Kocorek, it's worth it for the sheer pleasure.
Filling the hole is the best you can meet. Also, finding something new. If I'm looking for something very special, I know that it was produced years ago. First of all, I think, was it produced again now in better condition, or must I look for this old toy or model? I go and I look. If I can buy it on eBay or in Czech Republic, of course.
Discovery, agrees Curiosity Collectors Club head Ladislav Likler, is a huge part of the process.
Když přijdete někam, kde máte určitou kolekci něčeho.
You might be with someone showing you a collection, turning pages, and suddenly you spot something you'd heard about but never actually seen. You feel a familiar shiver down your spine, but you have to keep a poker face so the person doesn't know how badly you want it. But of course you do. It happened to me years ago when I got several labels from a cheese production facility which had belonged to the Archduke Ferdinand, labels which had his coat of arms. Nobody else has them. That's something which helps you through those leaner years when you dig up nothing.
Says Ladislav Likler, every one of us has a bit of the collector within, but most never act on the impulse to take collecting further.
Everyone has a spark for collecting, but not everyone becomes a collector. As children, we begin gathering things which we like. But that alone isn't enough. To take it to the next step, it requires patience and tenacity. Not everybody has that.
If you're thinking about starting your own collection, remember, it's important to keep things realistic. No collection is ever really complete. Rudolf Kocorek adds that it's important to outline a clear goal or focus early on.
From the beginning, you should focus on some theme. It's a mark, historical period, or racing cars, Formula One, Le Mans, or only Le Mans winners, or buses, or fire, or police cars, ambulances. But you have to focus what you will collect, or fantastic team, what I like. I have seen a collection of this kind, what I like to have. Because after years, when there are 300, 400 pieces in this collection, it makes a sense, because it's a collection of dream.
Kocorek makes clear his collection belongs to his whole family, although not for taking out and playing with on the floor. Not now, not ever.
After years, the youngest son promised me to continue in my collection. Like, he's 15 now, so who knows what will be. But as I know him, probably he will continue. But nowadays he cannot touch it. This collection.
That was Rudolf Kocorek of the Czech Curiosity Collectors Club, ending that edition of Czechs Today by Jan Fellinger. And that was first broadcast in April of last year. If you want to find the transcript of that, or indeed anything else you've heard in today's programme, then you can. All of our articles can be found both in text and audio format, again on our website, the address for which is www.radio.cz. And visit that to sign up for a free daily news email and download our podcast as well. And of course, write to us with your views on or reactions to anything you've heard in the show today. The address for emails is easy to remember. It's english@radio.cz. And if you want to send us a letter, that's only marginally more complicated. Address your comments to Vinohradska 12 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But that's all for today. So from myself, Rosie Johnston, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's thanks for listening and goodbye.
В эфире «Радио Прага» и навещание чешского радио. В летний период мы выходим в эфир по следующему расписанию. Внимание! Передачи выходят в эфир по универсальному времени. Летнее московское время соответствует универсальному времени плюс 4 часа. В Минске и Киеве универсальное время плюс 3 часа. В 4 часа утра русская редакция «Радио Прага» выходит в эфир на частотах 9445 кГц и 11600 кГц. В 11 часов 30 минут по универсальному времени вы можете нас услышать на частоте 11665 кГц и 15710 кГц. С 14 часов 30 минут русская редакция «Радио Прага» выходит в эфир на частоте 7345 кГц и 13580 кГц. В 18 часов «Радио Прага» выходит в эфир на частоте 5840 кГц. Время универсальное, разница с московским летним временем составляет 4 часа.